Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Milo's Pro Rewards members, go big during Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Buy more and save more with up to 20% off job site essentials like primed finger joint boards when you spend $3,000 or more. Plus, get up to 25% off PVC DWV pipes when you spend $250 or more. Shop Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 123. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Although this podcast comes from Northwest Georgia, that is definitely not true of the guests. Today, we speak to someone with international ethos about her journey as a professor, scholar, and filmmaker. Join me as we converse with Dr. Jeevani Sametta, Assistant Professor of Communication at Dalton State College. Welcome, Jeevani. And really, welcome to Dalton and this region. How is the move from Ohio going for you?
Hello, Barbara. Thank you for inviting me. The move has been pretty interesting. It's a lot of different things, but some similar things also from Ohio. Northwest Ohio, the place that I lived in, is completely flat. It took me a while to get used to that. And now I'm in the middle of mountains and valleys, which is amazing. And I've never lived in such a beautiful place before. And I can't wait for the fall foliage to take over. I've heard amazing things about it. So yeah, just look forward to that.
Yes, it should be here soon. Sometimes it comes earlier than other times. So that's great. You're teaching in the Department of Communication and Performing Arts and Foreign Language at Dalton State, and you are teaching what this semester?
This semester, I am teaching communication in professional settings and fundamentals of speech.
Okay.
Both which are pretty interesting courses. I have taught fundamentals of speech before, but it's a new batch of students. They're pretty different from the students that I was used to in Ohio. And it's been very interesting and fun, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of it is you have to get used to the Southern dialect. Some of them have more Southern dialect than others do. So that takes some getting used to. And things.
Yeah, that is something that I've been training myself to become better at, to like understand the Southern accent better, which I absolutely love because I think that it is, unique, and I don't think I will get to experience this accent anywhere else in the world. And so I really am enjoying it and trying to, you know, take in as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. The one here is distinct. It's Southern Appalachia. It's not like if you go to Southern Georgia, it's very different than the one here. So, yeah. So I'd like to start with just, could you tell us about your educational journey?
Absolutely. I began my higher education as an engineering student. I did my bachelor's in mechanical engineering. My parents wanted me to become an engineer because there was this boom in jobs that was happening back home in the engineering sector, and they thought it was a good option for, you know, me to consider. But I'd always wanted to be more in the field, in a field related to storytelling. And that was something that I couldn't express early on. But after finishing my engineering, I made the decision to make the switch. And I did my master's in communication at the Sarojini Naidu School of Arts and Communication in University of Hyderabad, which is one of the best programs, graduate programs for communication in India. Once I finished that, I worked for a couple of years, and then I decided during my time at during my master's, I was exposed to these really cool subjects that I didn't have access to before, about communication research, film studies, film history, all of which really were topics that I was greatly interested in, were things that I wanted to learn more about. And so a couple of years later, I applied to BGSU for a PhD program. And yeah, I recently graduated and here I am.
Okay. And BGSU is Bowling Green State University, which is in Bowling Green, Ohio, which, as you said, is in the northwestern part of the state.
Yes.
Yes. I attended Ohio University, which is in the opposite direction, back in the 70s, back in the dark ages. But so you said you spoke of home. So where is home?
Home is Hyderabad, the city of Hyderabad in the state of Telangana. It's in the southern part of India. I've lived there all my life. I do not know living anywhere else till I came to the United States. So Bowling Green, Ohio was actually my second home. Hyderabad is a city of about 7 to 8 million people. So it's very fast paced. There's people everywhere. There's things happening all over the place, and it's fun. I've loved growing up in that city, and it's taught me a lot of wonderful things, which I miss here. I miss the public transportation in that's so excellent in Hyderabad, and how you can just be a part of the crowd and not feel alone anymore. I miss all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing we don't do very well in the South, or in America in general, with some cities do it better than others, but not so much here. Yeah. So Americans are notoriously bad about world geography. So you're from southern India.
Yes.
How far south? Almost to the coast? Or
no. Hyderabad does not have any coasts.
Okay.
It's in the center. It's a plateau. So we've got beautiful rock gardens. And we used to have a lot of lakes, which have been taken over by the rapid expansion of the city. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no beaches.
Okay. I'm sure that when you came to Bowling Green State University and Northwestern Ohio there, that you had some culture shock. Can you tell some stories about that? Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's not.
Right. There's a couple of, everything was completely new. I was kind of westernized by pop culture. As a pop culture person, I was very familiar with what Hollywood was showing me, which was, which was more of this idea of America in terms of just it being New York or it being just LA, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there were some things I was prepared for, but there were some that I wasn't at all. I was pleasantly taken aback by how friendly people were. So like I said, Hyderabad is such a big city. You don't like look anybody in the eye. You don't say hi. You're just on your way. Like you're looking down, you're looking up. You're just, in your own zone. And in Bowling Green, everybody, when I went out, greeted me, asked me how I was, which was so pleasant. I absolutely loved that. And I it took me a while to start doing that too. Honestly, I came off as a rude person in the beginning because I didn't know the social cues that came with the place. When I used to go to any customer service representative, I used to just get to the task. I never used to be like, hello, how are you doing today? Good morning. That was completely new to me. And they used to be like, hi, how are you today? And I'm like, can I get one coffee? And I'm like, okay. That is very rude. I heard myself and I'm like, okay, that is very, very rude. So I started developing some of the skills. The portion sizes really surprised me still. When I go to restaurants and I order something, I'm really like, okay, that's a good portion size. I can eat that for a day.
Yeah.
These are some of the things that I've had to deal with. In particularly rural Ohio, the winters are completely new to me. So layering up, you know, going out, layering up was a task for me. Small things like that. But in terms of personal social cues, it's extremely difficult for me to call somebody older than me by their first name. Mm-hmm. So that is also something that I've been trying to make myself comfortable with.
Yeah, that's interesting. Some people think that people in the South are more friendly though than even that. Of course, that was a rural area. If you'd gone to New York, it would have been more like Hyderabad, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I agree. It's the Midwest hospitality. And I completely agree that the Southern hospitality has been more or less the same. That's one of the similar things about Ohio and Northwest Ohio and here.
So how do you bring or keep India with you living here?
That's a very good question. I have small little tiny ways that I do that. One of the ways that I definitely do that is through my earrings. I have like a huge collection of earrings. And a lot of them are from India. And even though they're like their aesthetic might be very Indian, I pair them with my Western wear and I wear them. And that makes me feel like I'm carrying a bit of India with me. Mm-hmm. I do like at home, I eat Indian food as much as possible. It also informs quite a bit of my work. I bring global examples, Indian examples to the classroom. I talk about it quite a lot. I think that that's very useful for students. In terms of my accent as well, I have owned my accent and I believe in the fact that my accent is itself cultural wealth that I'm imparting to my students as they are imparting theirs to me. My research deals quite a lot with Indian film. So that is another way I keep in touch with India. Although I do not get as many opportunities to watch mainstream Indian cinema in the theaters here, which is, again, a completely exciting experience. If you ever get the chance to do that, you should. It's something very unique.
Yeah, I was wondering, up in Chattanooga, do you go to that? We used to call it the rave. That's not what it's called anymore. But do you ever go to that one?
I haven't gone.
Okay, I think they show Indian films.
Okay.
Popular
maybe
ones.
Check that out.
Yeah, if you look on Fandango and look under 37411 for the zip code.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what you know. Obviously, I don't speak the language, but they're not American films, and they look like they're from India, which is probably an ignorant thing for me to say. I'm sorry, but that's the feeling I got. And so, have you been able to find a good store to get your food?
Indian food. There is one in Chattanooga. I go there only once in a while, not very frequently, but it's got everything. So okay. Yeah, I'm able to get my groceries from there.
Okay, yes. That's good. All right. So I'd like to lead into our discussion about film and creativity. And first, I'd like you to talk about your dissertation. You know, when we write a dissertation, we become the experts in a very, very narrow
subject. One of my advisors said it's like the leaf on a tree in a backyard in a country. She went through this whole thing. You know, that's what your dissertation is about. And to help us focus. And but I don't think that yours, from what I've read of yours, didn't sound that specific or that limited. Let's put it that way. It sounded like it was a pretty big subject.
I think that it is still, I mean, in a way, it is pretty broad. But in another way, I think that idea, even for me, comes from the fact that we have no knowledge about the wealth of vernacular cinemas that exist across the world. So let me tell what my dissertation is about. My dissertation focuses on this new movement that's been happening in Indian cinema, where South Indian vernacular language films have been able to travel across their regional boundaries to reach national audiences through dubbing and through other means. But dubbing has been something that was available to these films even before, but they could not travel like they are traveling now. And so I looked at why that is happening. What are the cinematic storytelling techniques that are being used to make sure that happens? What are the marketing techniques that are being used to make that happen? And because of that, there is also, and these films contain, like, they're all large scale, big budget. And typically, since they're addressing multiple markets, they are aiming for a lot more profit than a regular cinema would. So everything is scaled up. Just like everything in the film and behind the film, even the masculinities are scaled up in the films. So I thought that was very interesting. So I also looked at the representation of masculinities and femininities in the films also.
Mm-hmm.
So that's... this goes. Ultimately, the point that I want to make is that the part of research, the films that I've looked at are about 20 or 25, right? And they're just a handful, and they just go to show the fact that these films have been able to find their voice in the national arena. Just goes on to show that people in various parts of the country did not know about these films, did not know that these films, they would find them appealing. And still, I would like to say that the South Indian film industries have quite a bit of capital, have quite a bit of connections across various industries through which they are able to do this. But there are multiple other film industries in the country that do not have as much capital, that still have stories to be told, whose stories are still not represented in the mainstream narrative anywhere. So I still feel like it is the leaf on the branch, on the tree, in the field.
Well, I think that the thing that Americans, again, we're not very geographical or aware sometimes, that so many different languages are spoken in India, and the population of India, I would guess, is 3 to 4 times what ours is. Is that, yeah, that about right?
Yeah, it's a billion people. Yeah,
yeah. And so the idea that there would just be a genre of cinema that's in a certain area, but not otherwise, to Americans that might seem kind of odd, but that makes perfect sense because of the language barriers, you know. So I think that's very interesting. What led you to choose that subject? Just your interest in how it was, you saw it spreading?
I was looking for a topic. I wanted to do my dissertation on understanding spaces within film, spaces and how spaces were constructed, what they meant. And I was thinking about it, and it felt like more of an abstract idea than a concrete subject. And I and my partner went to watch a film, a Telugu film. Telugu is my mother tongue, my mother language. We went to watch this film. We came back. We were discussing about it passionately, like we always do. And then I just sat down and I'm like, why don't I write about this? Because this is completely new. It's happening at a time when I am beginning my graduate journey. These films started happening since 2015. So it would be something that would be a good contribution. It would also be something that is very close to me. I've grown up watching these films. I've analyzed them all my life, although not in a scientific manner. And now I can do that. And so I thought that it would be amazing if I can do that. And my positionality would help me analyze them better than anybody else would if they were to do it. So yeah, that was the reason I chose that topic. And I agree that it's very difficult to understand this idea that there are multiple cinemas within a nation. To make it simpler for audiences to understand, like, let's look at Europe. Europe has German film, it has French film, it has British film. It's the same thing in India. It has Telugu film, Tamil film, Kannada film, Assamese. So there are all of these coexisting together, but it's Bollywood that gets typically gets the title of being Indian cinema because it has been able to travel across the borders.
Okay. So yes, define Bollywood.
It's so difficult, right? I mean, Hollywood is a place. Bollywood is just Bombay cinema, Hindi cinema trying to be Hollywood.
Okay.
Portray itself as, you know, the wood of. So now all cinemas in India are woods. I mean, Telugu cinema is Tollywood. Tamil cinema is Kollywood. I mean, Nigerian cinema is Nollywood.
Okay, yeah.
So I gotcha.
Yeah. I thank you for that because I didn't know that it was that localized. I just, mm-hmm. I think a lot of Americans think it's just, oh, that's what they call movies from India. Bollywood, but it is from Bombay or Mumbai. Yeah. And okay, that's interesting. Would an American watching an Indian film from the first, you know, for the first time, what would they see as major differences?
I think everything.
Really? Okay. Dumb question.
Great question, because I mean, I guess I wouldn't be able to answer it. I mean, you should watch it and you should answer this question.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm guessing everything because our films are truly genre bending. I know that Americans sometimes watch certain film directors' films like Quentin Tarantino and say, oh, that's genre bending.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's still not that genre bending because we've got like comedy happening after an action sequence, after a song and dance, after a really romantic scene. So it's not one thing. It's an amalgamation of all things. Mm-hmm. That also comes from this this need for that film to reach the maximum number of people. Right from when indigenous filmmaking started in India during early 1900s. The need for cinema was to reach the educated middle class as well as the rural audiences. They needed to reach everybody. So they needed to have something for everyone in the film. And that's how the film form came to be what it is. And I think that's what makes it interesting also.
Uh-huh. That's neat. Okay. All right. You've convinced me. I will look into going to that theater and seeing if I can find something that is truly Indian and if that's what's going on. Okay. So I'd also like to ask you about your own filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what projects have you completed and what are you going to be working on?
So I have done a couple of projects. One was a documentary film when I was a graduate student at the university in Hyderabad, which was about this the experience of a which was a reflective documentary. It was a reflective poetic documentary about the experience of this particular woman from this tribe from northeastern India. But later on, I did another short film, which was a narrative short film, and it was I made it for the India Film Project Festival, and it is a very short film, and I shot it during COVID, so I honestly had very few resources, but I'm really proud of the product because it got shortlisted to be displayed all over the country on MTV India. The film is called Clap Away, and the cast is my brother and my parents. And since then, I haven't had the opportunity to start working on a project again till recently. Over the summer, I shot, I and my partner, who is also a photographer and a videographer, we shot a brief documentary. We worked with this organization, nonprofit organization, called Amazing Kids in Toledo, in Ohio. And Amazing Kids was established after recognizing the needs that school-going kids have in terms of reading and reading comprehension. And so it was created as a way to utilize media and media tools to make sure that reading, listening, and speaking skills are developed amongst school-going kids populations. And today it has reached more than 1,000 kids. And the founder, Montisha Mace, she's a radio personality in Toledo. She's also teaching at the University of Toledo currently. She was kind enough to let us sit in on her summer programming for a month. We got to shoot two different batches of students engaging with cameras, engaging with podcast equipment. There was DJ equipment. They were making TikToks, and they were also learning not just to put their voice forward, but also to be careful on the internet, but also to be media literate. So we got to shoot all of that. It is in the process of editing right now, which I'm hoping to finish by the end of December and send it out to some film festivals this upcoming year. Really excited about that project.
Oh, wonderful. Not to take over from the job I used to have, but it would be wonderful for you all to schedule a screening when it's ready. Absolutely. In the Absolutely. Spring or whenever. Because I would love to see that. And I think that spotlights you to the community and what, as well as what the department's doing, which brings me to the question. Will you be teaching film at Dalton State or any film courses?
Yes, I am. I'm going to be teaching in the spring. I'm teaching the short film, live action short film.
Oh, good. Good.
Yes. Yeah. So I am very, very excited about that because I feel like there will be products by the end of the semester that we can showcase, that mm-hmm. can screen, that will get the students also motivated. I heard that the last batch of students who did that did a really good job with resources. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually spoken to a couple of them. I have them in my communication and professional settings class. Okay. So they seemed very enthusiastic. And I can't wait to see what they have to say. And I think that it's a great medium that allows everyone who wields it to say things that to engage in self-expression that is not possible in other modes other modes.
Well, I'm excited about that. And I had tried to get that class on the schedule for a long time, but I had a hard time finding somebody that could teach it who had the background. And the person who taught it did a fine job, but he was doing it remote. So it's fabulous that somebody here is teaching it and it's in the department. So I am so thrilled to hear that. And the students will eat it up. They will love it because they have ideas and they want to use them. And
get them out there. And so when you show them, I got to be there.
I want to be there
at the screening because that was so exciting last year to see what they came up with. I mean, they were student films, but they were fun to watch, you know, and everything. So, so do you have any thoughts about creativity as a filmmaker?
It's a very tough question to try to define or answer what creativity is.
Oh, I know. And I don't ever do that. And we just kind of let you define it your way. So,
right. So I will give you my understanding of it. I feel like creativity is understanding the rules, then pushing the boundaries of what is possible and successfully breaking those rules to create a new paradigm, to do something completely new that makes sense to somebody who's watching it or listening to it. That is creativity to me, to be like pushing the boundaries and, you know, figuring out something new, figuring out what works. And film is so unique in the sense that it's multiple things, right? It's not just camera, it's lighting, it's color, it's music, it's dialogue, it's performances. And to be able to present something that is truly creative or truly unique, you've got to like mix and match all of those dials, like turn them around to find the optimal position. Mm-hmm. And that is quite a difficult, laborious and creative process. So yeah, I think creativity to me is that, you know, break the rules, push the boundaries and break the rules. That's what I understand by.
I like that. I like that because, because it's easy to just learn the rules and keep doing them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But to be creative, there has to be outside of those rules to a certain extent. There's a principle that came up in marketing back in the 30s and 40s, and it was called Maya. And I'm forgetting what it means, the actual words, but it was the idea that when you create something, it has to still be accessible, but people have to recognize it has to get their attention. They have to realize it's different. Mm-hmm. But they still have to understand it. It's accessible, but still unique. And I wish I could remember what the exact, it's M-A-Y-A. I can't remember the exact, I can't remember exact words, but I remember what the concept is. So having experienced higher education in two countries, how would you talk about them, compare them?
Bachelor's education is very different compared to India. The US has a more holistic approach to bachelor's education. Yeah, because going into your degree, you have not honestly decided what it is that you are, that you want to become. You are figuring it out as you go. And you have these options to take electives from various schools, from various programs, and, you know, figure out what it is that you like, what it is that you don't like. In India, as a bachelor's student, you're already decided. You're an engineer. You're studying and you're getting an engineering education. You're getting a medical education. You're getting whatever, right? Accounting education. Whatever it is, you are set. And let's say that happens here as well, but we do not even have access to electives. The only elective that I had access to as a mechanical engineering student was for me to take English class, one English class in my 4 years of bachelor's education. That's all the humanities I ever got till I started my graduate program. So in that manner, I think there is a lot more holistic education in bachelor's here. When it comes to graduate studies, I think it's more similar. I think India and US have more similarities, although in India, the hierarchies are a little more stronger, the hierarchy between student and professor and assistant professor and professor, they're more stricter hierarchies there compared to here, but more or less they are similar, pretty similar. The other one other thing is that in the US, there are way too many public universities. That's a good thing. I'm not saying it as a, as a,
now you're right, there are.
In India, there are very few, and they are truly public universities. And what I mean by that is, I finished my entire master's education with a couple of $100, which is unthinkable any like in this country. So yeah, I think those are some major, major differences. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's. I imagine though that it's harder to get into one of them.
Absolutely. There's very tough competition, which is why I feel extremely lucky that I got into the one that I got into back home. Because again, I don't think I would have met such a diverse student group anywhere else, in local colleges and local universities and institutions. I wouldn't find that diversity, but in a public university, you have students coming from all over the country, from different backgrounds. And that just exposes you to ideas that you haven't had before. Just that one campus changes your perspective quite a bit. It's an experience that I will always be grateful for.
All right. I have so enjoyed this discussion with Jeevani Samhita, who is also Dr. Jeevani Samhita, who is a new assistant professor of communication at Dalton State College. And I'm excited for what she's going to achieve there and carrying on the work. Thank you, Jeevani, for giving of your time in a very busy semester for you. The fall is always chaotic. I'm not sure the spring's that much better, but I will warn you, April on that campus is really tough. It's really tough.
Thank you for the heads up.
Yes, it is. So much going on. So thank you for being on this podcast. I look forward to talking with you more as I interact with folks at the college.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast, Barbara. And I can't wait to meet you and take you to an Indian film the next
time. Oh, okay. That's what we need to do. All right.
Yes.
I'll hold you to that.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Jeevani and I got to talking about the fact that there's a movie theater in Eastridge, Tennessee, not far from us, that shows Indian films. Afterward, I sent her the link, and she was happy to learn about that. The prequel to one of the films being shown was discussed in her dissertation. I say that to say that there are surprises everywhere. We have to look. I think looking and seeing and observing are vital parts of creativity. They sound easy, but they're hard because we have to slow down, put down our phones, and focus. In late September and early October, I took a trip to Turkey with a group, and I saw plenty there. You can visit my website blog to see more about it. Travel is hard, but I think it builds something in us nothing else does. Coming soon on this podcast, I speak with Matthew Gramling of the Brandy Heritage Center of Northwest Georgia and with acclaimed author Anne Height. As well, please go back in the archives to see who else I've talked with. For now, seek creativity.